Welcome once again to Learning Digital Photography. I'm your host, Jason Anderson. You are listening to episode number 60 of the Learning Digital Photography podcast. With me on the show this week is the beautiful Andy Smith. Andy Smith hails from Dallas, Texas. She is a, I guess I would classify you as a photojournalist, photographer/journalist photographer. She's been on the podcast before, several times actually. I think this is probably your fourth or fifth appearance here, right?
Something like that.
Well, anyway, welcome back to the show. Good to have you on again for, I guess, a biennial or whatever you call those things, the fives and tens, whatever they come. This is podcast number 60, right? So welcome to podcast number 60, Andy. Good to have you on the show again.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah, we haven't had the pleasure of talking with each other and making faces at each other for almost a month here on the podcast, so... it's good to have her back on the show. A couple news bits. I haven't done news in a while, but these are things that came up that we were mentioning before we went live that we thought deserved a little bit of a mention. One of the things that came out, and we're both Canon shooters, so I should probably qualify these news items because we tend to look at the Canon news more than other news. This isn't to say that Canon is better. It's just when you shoot a particular brand of gear, you tend to be interested in new lenses that come out for that gear. So having said that, Canon announced a new lens. They have a 55 to 250 millimeter lens that came out. I think that was, what was it, about a week ago? Something like that.
I forget this week. Yeah.
It was sometime within the last week or so. We'll throw a link to that in the show notes. This is kind of an interesting subject, though, because this is version 2 of this lens, right? They have this focal length before.
Yeah.
So it's an update to the 55 to 250. And... inevitably, right, people are going to ask me either in the comments or via email, Jason, what does this lens do? Why should I look at this lens? Because, and the reason why people are asking me this is they say that I could see having a 50 because it's good for portrait work, but then a 250, that's more for sports. So why would I want to zoom from portrait work to sports? Wouldn't the optical quality suffer? My answer is, in this day and age, not as much as it used to be the case. Optical quality has really improved in recent years, so you're not going to see the same kind of degradation on the extremes. I think Andy actually had a good perspective on what capacity this lens would be best used by. So Andy, why don't you share your thoughts on the new 55 to 250 from Canon?
I think it's a great walking around lens, what I call it. It's the lens that you're going to put on your camera and go out and shoot the kids at the park.
Right.
It's a good one to take on vacation, so you only have to bring one lens with you.
Or two. I always take a macro with me.
Yeah, I do too, but that's not here or there.
For most people, it's definitely a good walk around lens. Okay. If you're into photo walks, because I've talked a lot about photo walks here on the blog and on the podcast and in various capacities, photo walks, like Andy said, when you're walking around, you want to have variety in the types of shots that you're doing, and these variable zooms are better at it. And the longer the zoom range, the more opportunity you'll have to shoot at both near distances and long distances. So the 55 to 250 is definitely a lens that would fit in that category. So thank you to Canon for updating that. Hopefully I'll get a chance to take a look at that here in the near future if it isn't too pricey. I'll see what they rent for when they come into the rental scene. The other piece of news, it's also somewhat Canon related, surprise, surprise, is a photo contest. It's sponsored by Canon. Ron Howard's involved with it. For those of you that live under a rock, Ron Howard is probably one of the more well-known directors in the Hollywood community. And Andy, you had mentioned this to me before we went live about this contest, or it's... what is it? It's a Long Live Imagination or something like that? What's it called?
Yeah, it's called Long Live Imagination. And photographers are asked to submit their most imaginative photographs based on movie themes. And you can get more information on their YouTube site. It's youtube.com/imagination.
Very cool. And there's also a link over on the Canon website as well. So we'll include both of those in the show notes. Obviously, we're both Canon shooters, like I said, so it's something that caught our eye. And it's contests, so you can probably win cool stuff, right? So anytime there's contests involved, you're either going to win software or gear or something along those lines. I'm guessing that Canon is probably going to have some kind of gear for the winner of this Long Live Imagination contest campaign. So do check out the information over on the YouTube site and the Canon website. We'll throw those in the show notes as well. The last piece of news that we have to share on this podcast is actually a little bit of personal news. I've just announced a new ebook that I've put out. It's a DIY legal kit. It's a PDF of very useful legal forms. So for any photographer that is looking to go pro or be considered professional, or you are a shooting professional and you just haven't had time to put the forms together because we know how expensive attorneys can be, right? I put together a kit. I actually consulted with an attorney. I had an attorney that put these forms together for me. You get 6 forms. There is a contract form, so if you have an event contract that you need to get someone to sign off on, there is a licensing agreement form. There is a Schedule A for that licensing. There's a Schedule B for that licensing where you can itemize the images that are going to be used, the description of those images. The Schedule B spells out the terms for the licensing, whether it's exclusive or non-exclusive, whether it's a 1-year term or 5-year term, whether it's for web use or print use, all these different criteria. It's just checkboxes, right? So all you got to do is just check them off. And then at the top of each form, it's customizable. This is one of the beautiful parts of these, because when a lawyer does it for you, they don't leave room for your creativity. They really don't. They're bland. They're boring. It's black and white. There's nothing there. I've taken these. I haven't changed the context because I didn't want to adjust the legalities of it at all. I still want it to be a legally acceptable contract. And it is a legally acceptable contract in pretty much every state. You may want to check if you know particular nuances in your municipality. You will probably want to check with an attorney and have them review these forms. But even reviewing forms is a lot cheaper than having them create them from scratch. I've seen other kits out there go for anywhere from $50 to $200 for a full-blown set of contracts and legal documentation that any photographer would need. These are on sale for $30. I'm setting the retail price at $30. Andy, do you know what the marketplace is like in Dallas? Is that a good price point for that area?
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Pretty close? Well, guess what? It's even cheaper than that. Because if you get it, if you're one of the first 250 people to get it, you can get it for 50% off for $15.
That's an awesome deal.
6 forms for $15. There's a README PDF file in there that explains all the details of each form. Use the promotional code DIY2011, so DIY2011, to get 50% off. You get all 6 forms and the README file for $15. Go to canonblogger.com/ebooks to get that form at your discretion. Don't wait. Get it today, because if you wait too long, you'll have to pay the full $30 price. I did have to pay the lawyer to get these forms created for me, so there is a little bit of an expense involved here that I'd like to hopefully recoup. So this is something that I did just because it's something I really believe in that people need to be aware of. You need to protect yourself. You need to protect your images. If you don't take measures to protect yourself and your images, someone's getting a phone call. What
Sorry.
Was that? What were you doing?
Sorry.
She's watching something while I'm talking about the legal kit.
I would never do that, because that is very important paperwork to have. You should have that with you at all times.
You know what? I do the same thing when you're talking, so ha. But anyway, it's a DIY kit. I'll wrap it up. It's a DIY kit. 6 forms for $30. You can get it right now for $15 using the promo code DIY2011 over at canonblogger.com/ebooks. So that's the last little news bit. Get it quick before that discount expires, because it is only good for the first 250 buyers. Highly recommend it, of course. It's my ebook, so I'm going to recommend it. But anyway, those are the news bits. But oh, one last news bit. There is a photo contest going on right now. I'm not getting anything from this by any means, but this month's photo contest is on the Flickr thread, and the theme is speed. And for those of you that want to submit a photo to the contest, you can win a copy of Photo Mechanic. If you've not heard of Photo Mechanic, this is actually really cool software. And Andy and I were talking about this offline, and I found out that her newspaper actually uses, not her newspaper, but the newspaper she shoots for, uses the same software as well. This is designed to expedite your workflow. So if you're out shooting events photography, or if you're into journalism photography, and you need the 5 best pictures quick, Photo Mechanic is what will do it for you. I've got a review coming out soon on it. But Andy, you could probably speak to that more fluently than I could at this point, since you probably used it more often than I have. What are your thoughts on Photo Mechanic?
it is fantastic, especially when you need to get a lot of images out. If you've shot 500 images and you need to get those edited and out to an editor, or to, if you're an event photographer, it is the perfect software for that.
Right, and it really can improve your workflow tremendously. I've been doing some tests with it. I took a photo shoot of 50 images, a photo shoot of 100, and a photo shoot of 500 images, and I timed the import. So I timed it in Lightroom and Photo Mechanic blew it away in terms of generating thumbnails. Now keep in mind, Photo Mechanic doesn't have the same editing capabilities that Lightroom does, so if you really want to fine-tune things, Lightroom is the go-to resource that I would recommend. But that doesn't diminish the capabilities of Photo Mechanic at all. I think a full license for this is around $200, right? Something like that.
So.
$199 or $200. If you go to camerabits.com, you can download a trial of it. But if you throw an image in the Flickr thread, you can win it for free. So thank you to the folks at CameraBits for sponsoring the Learning Digital Photography contest series over at Flickr. If you look up the contest series, or LDP contest, I think is the name. I'll throw a link in the show notes there as well. If you're listening to the podcast, you probably know about how to get to the contest, so I won't dally on that. The main reason why I'm bringing Andy on the show today is because I had a blog post recently that talked about this whole concept of what your inspiration is when it comes to photography. And a lot of people I know have approached photography as drawing with light, or painting with light, photographos, painting with light, or writing with light, however you want to define that. So a lot of people look at it from the lighting perspective, and I know a lot of photographers also that look at it from a compositional perspective. And I really don't think there's a wrong answer here when it comes to lighting and composition, because you need both. Right, Andy? You need both?
Yeah, you definitely need both to make a good image.
It's like a one-man podcast, and Andy's just sitting here nodding and listening along. I'm like, you can talk, you know?
I didn't want to be rude and interrupt.
That's not interrupting. It's called a dialogue, an exchange. And it doesn't include making faces like that either, like AJ found out last time. But yeah, so it's this whole concept of... She's making faces again. It's this whole concept of lighting and composition. And I talked about it on the blog, is like the spectrum, where at one end of the spectrum you have lighting, that's how you approach your images, versus composition, and that's how you approach it. But I wanted to bring Andy on because she mentioned to me in passing, two, three podcasts ago, that you utilize both perspectives in your photography. So I was hoping to get you on. Maybe we can give a little bit more of your background, what kind of photography style you have, and how you utilize both ends of the spectrum here. So, Andy, I'm actually going to shut up now and let you do all the talking. And then I get to make faces at you. So it's all on you, girl.
Well, I am a photojournalist. It doesn't matter if I'm photographing aircraft or people. I try to tell a story. And I think I've been shooting for about 7 years now. I started out with a Kodak EasyShare and then purchased a Canon Film Rebel.
Wait a minute. You started out with an EasyShare?
I did.
Very cool. I started out with a Vivitar 110.
Nice. We were high tech back then.
Yes. Oh, my God. That was awesome. That little skinny, narrow camera, right? So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You started out with a Kodak EasyShare.
I realized that I loved photography, so I switched my major from graphic design at the Art Institute to photography. And pretty much the rest is history, as they say. I photograph nouns, people, places, and things. It includes sports and events. And any news story I can pick up. I just want to be able to share what I see with people. And if the story is being told, or if people end up being curious about the story behind the image, that's great too.
Right, so much the better, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like it's all about sharing your vision with the world, and your vision of the world is, like you said, the nouns, the people, places, and things, right?
Right.
So, okay, so with that perspective in mind, I also want to throw out this other little nugget about Andy, because we had a similar conversation a while back, and she mentioned that she is not necessarily precluded from just stopping her car in the middle of the highway, jumping out and going over to shoot something because something pretty caught her eye. That looked nice in the light, right? It was something that looked nice in the light. So you've actually done both. You've actually been caught by the light, or captured by the light, I guess, to use a... whose book was that? Captured by the Light. Moose Peterson. Moose Peterson uses the phrase captured by the light. So you have been captured by the light, but you've also been captured by composition as well.
I have.
So which one would you say you lean more towards? Are you more captured or inspired by light, or are you more captured or inspired by composition? Because I have a suspicion, but I don't want to presume anything. You know what presuming means, right?
I do, thank
or
you.
Or assuming. I should say assuming, not presuming.
You know what assuming does.
Yes, yes. But presuming is different, so maybe it's not as bad. Anyway, which way do you swing on that? Do you lean more towards lighting, or finding light and then figuring out a composition for the light? Or do you find the composition and then work lighting into that?
It really depends on what I'm photographing.
Sure.
Usually my landscapes, my travel images are more driven by light than they are subject matter.
So it's like, oh, you see the light and then you figure out, okay, what's going to define that light best for you?
Exactly. And okay. How am I going to make this image work with this light? If I'm photographing portraits, it's really my subject comes first and the composition of the subject, and I make lighting help tell that story as a secondary element.
Right. And I guess sports photography would also fall into that category too, because you said you've shot in a lot of sports before. So like if you have to capture a quarterback, right? You know, so if you're shooting a quarterback with his arm cocked ready to pass the ball, you can't say, okay, stop the play right there, Mr. Quarterback, hold that pose because I want to get this lighting just right in here and you want to get things aligned to make it look really nice. No, you can't do that.
Right.
You're going to get tackled on the field and break several bones. You've got to capture the moment and pray to God. Well, not pray to God, but you got to make sure that the lighting is right when you're composing that image because it's the composition that's catching the eye at that point.
But on the other hand, I have been known to see pretty light on a football field, especially high school football Friday nights. In the early part of the season, you can catch the sunset during the first quarter. So if you stand on the right side of the field, you can catch a sunset and silhouettes of football players.
That's cool. That just reminded me of a show, too. There was a show that was on NBC and DirecTV for a while called Friday Night Lights.
It was filmed here in Texas.
Yes, it was. I actually knew that, too. I think it was in Austin.
Yes.
In Austin. But they had some fantastic cinematography coming out of that show. I don't know if any of the listeners out there watch Friday Night Lights or watched it. But it really did have some fantastic imagery because, like Andy was saying, you capture any sport or anything really at the right time of day, the light can really define that subject very well for you. So it can go either way in that vein, whether you are looking at composition and the lighting enhances it, or you see some light and the composition just happens to be there to help you define that. And I think from my perspective, it probably works more towards the other end of the spectrum. Because, Andy, it sounds like most of your work, you tend to lean towards the compositional approach and let the lighting fill in after that?
Probably a majority of the time.
Yeah, and I think it depends, really, your inspiration really comes from how you approach things normally. And then you always will have the off occasions where you don't always approach it from that way, but you've been known to where you can approach it from the opposite. And from my own perspective, from a photography approach, I tend to actually see light first. So, and the best example I have of this is something that happened to me way back. I can't even remember how many years ago. I don't want to go into that kind of discussion right now.
I don't
now.
Know if I can count that high.
Oh, you're so funny because she's only 4 years younger than me. But no, I was in South Carolina and I was walking back from a photo walk actually and walked into the parking garage to get to my car. And there happened to be some rays of light, some sunset light, surprise, surprise, always the golden hours, right? It's always what catches your eye. And these rays of light were coming through the different stanchions inside the garage, so it gave this really cool grid look. And I can throw this image back up on the in the comments if you want, I'll throw a link to it. But I saw the light, and the light is what caught my eye first. And then after that, I moved further over in the spectrum to the other side and thought about how to compose it. So I saw the light and I said, well, do I want the rays of light to go left to right in the image? Do I want them to go front to back? Do I want to do it at an angle? So it's like I saw the light first and then figured out how to compose. So I think that's where it can go from either angle. And neither one is either right or wrong, right? Because it's all about just what initially inspires you, and you just fill in the rest.
Right, as long as you get the image and capture.
Exactly, that's ultimately what counts. Get the image first and worry about all the sundry details later. Because that really is the ultimate point here in photography anyway, right? We're inspired by something we want to capture and share it with the world. And hopefully the world is listening or looking.
And if they're not, they can look.
Yeah, and then they can look online after we've had the thought. It doesn't have to be right in that moment either. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of this conversation. I was thinking about putting a piece together on this, an article on this with accompanying images, but decided it really would work better as a conversation rather than an article, because articles really just can't do justice the way a conversation can. I think for something so esoteric like this. Ooh, here's a multisyllabic word for you, esoteric.
I think that's an SAT word.
Esoteric is SAT. It sounds very alliterative of you, Andy. Anyway, it was just kind of an interesting diversion. And like I said, Andy was a good person to bring in to talk about this, because I really think you probably are better than most, I think, at approaching it from both sides. Like, I know some guys out there that are lighting gurus. My friend Kevin Garrison is just wicked smart when it comes to lighting. He'll talk about hair lights and grid spots, and you know, you'll have banks of lights and snoots of light and hotspot 10-degree bubble and all this stuff. And that's so dialed in that, you know, it really gives a technical perfection element to all of his images. And there's nothing wrong with that, but, you know, it shows that there's different perspectives. He starts from the lighting perspective, and some people can approach it from the opposite, where you start from the compositional approach and then bring the light in after that.
My second shooter, Chris Baylor, is one of those lighting geeks. And he'll draw you diagrams, and he'll light a half a degree to make it right. And the
funny thing is, when people with these technical people that do that, they will do that little 5-degree difference or just minor adjustment, and you didn't see it
right before
they made that change. And then once they made that change, you're like, oh, yeah. I see how the shadow is a little more diffused now. And you're like, I never would have seen that.
He'll come to a shoot with a small studio of lights. And I come to a shoot with my camera, a flashlight, my iPhone, and a couple strobes.
Well, and that actually brings up a good subject, because don't forget, strobes aren't the only source of light. There's the big one, right, that's up in the sky, the sun.
There's a huge free one that we forget about sometimes.
It's free, hello. Except what happens if you're shooting after dark?
Well, then you can use the moon.
Oh, look at that. She's right there with the kicker.
Or
there's the sunlight.
Any
there's
available light.
Any available. Yeah, isn't that the Joe McNally thing? The whatever damn light's available, I'm going to use it.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's a good little subject, if you will, because when we talk about lighting your subject, we're really allowing for any kind there, right?
Right. There's no rule saying that you have to use photo lights to light your subject.
And see, that's the whole thing where I kind of take issue with it, because I really don't see photo lights or available light or natural light. Those semantics are just, and you see me shake my hands and go, oh, that just doesn't make sense, because it's all light.
Exactly.
You know, you shape it, you modify it, you change it, however you need to.
You're
you know, if some works.
You get an image and go, oh, you know what? They didn't use white lightning lights, or they didn't use a strobe. I can't believe they used an iPhone to light that, or a flashlight to light that.
Yeah.
No one's going to care how you lit it, as long as you got what you were
lighting. Yeah. Yeah. If you get the image that's pleasing to you, that's ultimately what matters. I knew a guy on the Denver Photo Walk group that I'm a member of. He took his iPhone out in the middle of the photo shoot, propped that up behind a flower, and because it was far enough back, he threw the background way out of focus. So all you saw was this black and this silver rim somewhere, and then light emanating from it. And you really couldn't tell it was an iPhone.
That had to be a cool image.
It was very cool. And I had this flower on. I'm just like, I never would have thought an iPhone would be both the background and the light source for an image. And I was just like, that's pretty brilliant.
A friend and I lit macros in a bar one night with our iPhones.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, so there's tons of light sources available. We're not necessarily saying lighting has to be one particular source, whether, it be sunlight or moonlight, like Andy said, or iPhone light or candles or flashlights. I know David Zeiser uses flashlights.
Oh, I have some great
for different
flashlights
kinds of lights.
That I use. I have this big, huge one that looks like a laser gun that
it has the
best light.
And those are all those LEDs inside there, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And there's different types of flashlights, too. There's LED flashlights. There's the instant-on lights, whatever they're called. I forget what those are. Fluorescent. That's the kind of one I'm thinking of. There's LED lights. There's fluorescent lights. There's incandescent lights. There's studio strobes. There's strobist flashes. There's the sun. There's the moon. Heck, use candles if you want. You know?
Just light it.
It's all light. Just light it however it appeals to you best. And capture that shot, because the shot is ultimately what it's all about. Wow. I believe that's it. How long were we talking? Please tell me I was recording this. Yes, I was.
You were.
I was. So, Andy, she's like, please tell me you're recording. Her face got all ghost-like. So, yeah, that's going to wrap things up for this episode of Learning Digital Photography. Andy, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Always happy to have you on the show. It's fun seeing each other make faces while the other one's trying to talk. It's always appealing. I really should do a video podcast at some point and not tell you.
Oh, that would be mean.
So I couldn't do that. In good conscience, I couldn't do that. Anyway, thank you for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Where can people find you out on the interwebs, internets, or
they can
Twitter
find me at andysmith.net, and that will take you to my Andy Smith Photography site, which is my more commercial and photojournalism.
Okay.
It'll take you to 818 Photography, which is about to get a major makeover.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, too. Okay, well, before we go, Andy, a quick facelift promo about the one website that you're redesigning.
818 Photography is going to get not only a makeover on the website and the blog, it's getting a new name.
And we don't know the name. She's not telling us the name. She's being very cruel and secretive in this redesign and facelift that she's going on. So for those of you that want to check out her current work, go to andysmith.net and 818designs.com,
no,
right?
818photography.com.
I'm sorry, 818photography.com. Probably not. I've known you for like 4 years, and I still get this URL screwed up sometimes. So 818photography.com, andysmith.net. And on the Facebook, what is it, Andy Smith?
Yes, and on Twitter, I'm at Andy Smith.
At Andy Smith. So it's Andy Smith everywhere, AndieSmith. Andy, thank you again, as always, for coming on the show.
Bye.
Such a pleasure to have you on.
It's always fun.
Clasped hands and church-like style. But yeah, we do have a lot of fun on the show, and I do want to thank you for coming on. So that's it for this 60th episode of Learning Digital Photography. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.